All right. So, welcome everybody. Tonight I've asked a friend to come and speak, and we used to do service together. I met him on the Wednesday night fabulous We Agnostic Santa Barbara meeting. And I know he zooms around to other meetings as well, but I haven't seen this guy in a while, and I haven't heard his story in a while. So, without further ado, I'd like to introduce Jeff, and you can share as long as you like. Any topic relevant to your recovery, you can curse if you want. Anything goes pretty much here. Welcome to Tutsunoyo, Jeff.
Thanks so much, Bridget. My name's Jeff. I'm an alcoholic, and I also did quite a few drugs. And I'm grateful to AA for being sober today. It's always an honor and a privilege to lead a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And anything that I say is basically just my opinion, unless I'm quoting it out of a certain book. And I'm going to basically share what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. But before I do that, I want to share about three slogans because there are three slogans in the big book. And for this alcoholic, they basically can encapsulate the whole program. The first one is first things first. The second one is live and let live. And the third one is easy does it. So for me, first things first means that I can't take the first drink. That is paramount. That's what I learned in my first 30 days of sobriety. If you don't take the first drink, you'll never get drunk. And for me, I didn't realize that it was the first drink that got me drunk, not the eighth or the ninth. And that once I'd taken the second drink, it wanted a third drink, and the third drink wanted a fourth drink. So if I don't take the first drink, I will stay sober. And what I to you know the first step there's the first step in the big book in the steps, but there's another first step in More About Alcoholism, which I really like. I like it more than the one that says that your life is unmanageable, because I know a lot of people who are very, very successful. They were managing their lives. One guy was the actually a hospital administrator with 800 employees, but he came into Alcoholics Anonymous unable to manage his drinking. And so the line in the big book that I like is says, we learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we are alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. Because for a long time I was in denial. I did not want to accept that I couldn't drink like normal people, that I couldn't control the amount of alcohol that went into my body. And another first things first is this is just my story. It may be your story, it may not be your story, but for me, I have to take my meds every morning. Every morning since 1982, I was diagnosed as being manic depressive. Let's go back, May 8th of 1984, 40 years ago, on graduation day from USC, supposed to be a very, happy occasion in one's life, I actually ended up in a mental hospital. And I may get to that story a little later, but that was basically when I decided to start Alcoholics Anonymous, to stop drinking, stop using. It didn't take at first, but it was the beginning. Tesnua, it was definitely the beginning. And so that is crucial for me, and I've probably missed about 5 days in the last 40 years. And so first things first, another first thing for me is to remember the acronym HALT, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. Because when I'm in those states, the chances of me being irritable, restless, discontent, and potentially thinking about drinking can go up. And so those are things that, I never used to even contemplate when I was out there drinking and using. I would miss meals. I would miss days of sleep. I definitely was lonely a lot, and I was also tired. I was sleeping a lot of the time too. What also goes into first things first for me is one word. I learned it at the West Side Orlando Club. It was on the wall. I thought it was kind of ridiculous that it was there three times. Think, think, think. But, I asked an old timer, and he said to me that you need to think the drink through. Drink, drunk, disaster. Or in some, extreme cases, it's drink, drunk, dead. And that's something that I've remembered for the last 40 years. So that's pretty much about first things first. I also like to say that, every day I wake up, it's the first day of the rest of my life. And just to try and enjoy the day. Live and let live is actually the mantra of the morning meditation meeting that I go to at 9 o'clock on Zoom. And at the end of the meeting, everybody, says in unison, live and let live. So for me, that means that I've got to live my life. I've got to keep my side of the street clean, and I've got to let other people live their lives. And that was very difficult for me to do because I wanted to control other people, places, and things. And it didn't work out too well for me. And, we can only live in the day. And then if you break it down even further, we can only live in the now. And that is probably the greatest gift I've been given in Alcoholics Anonymous, besides the fact that the craving for alcohol was arrested many years ago. Because when I live in the now, I'm not living in fear of the past, excuse me, of in guilt of the past and fear of the future. And that's the two time periods that I used to live in most of my life. I was constantly berating my past, and I was constantly projecting a worse future. And when I just am centered, grounded, and live in the now, I'm very comfortable in my own skin most of the time. And so I have to let others live their own lives, stay out of controlling their lives. And I've also learned the hard way with relatives that for some people, I just have to love them from afar. Some people in my life were toxic, and I had to remove them from my life. That's what I that maybe that's what they talk about when they say it's a selfish program. It's all about self-care. And then lastly, easy does it. So easy does it to me means that I need to relax, not get frustrated, not get overwhelmed, to try do things in a state of precision as opposed to confusion, to enjoy each moment and as best I can, and also I extend that to enjoy each meal. I really try and live my life like each meal is my last because one day it will be. And to smell the roses, to stop and smell the roses. My father used to say to me when I was younger, I don't know where he got this saying from, but he said, "Jeffrey, you're rushing around like a blue ass fly." And then with Easy Does It also comes in traditional AA, it's let God let go. For me today, it's just let go. Just ex you know that that comes to accepting reality as reality, that I have no control over certain events. One of them was last Tuesday, which I may get into a little bit later. My ex-wife, I was just with her. We just rushed off to Costco because she can't drive at night, and I made sure that there was enough time to get back for the meeting. And we were married for 30 years, and we've been divorced for 3, and she's my best friend. But we went in different ways the last 5 years of our marriage, especially during COVID. We were like two ships passing in the dark, and we got divorced. And she's from Thailand, and she used to always tell me about the saying in Thai. It says, life is short, so why don't you go slow? And so I do things mostly, just I trudge. I trudge the road of happy destiny, and I don't rush around like I used to when I was drinking and using. Those days are over. So at least I've discussed, that part of the program for me. Obviously, there are the steps as well. Whatever steps you're comfortable with that you want to work or not work. I've met many people in Alcoholics Anonymous who don't work steps, but obviously they. If you don't work them, you can't have the benefit that those steps may afford you. Just like people who don't want to have a sponsor, and I don't have a sponsor at this point in my life, and I haven't for a long time. But I did have a sponsor, and I am very envious of people who can say, oh, I've had a sponsor. My sponsor's been the same guy or woman for 35 years, for 20 years. Because that's a relationship that people have cultivated that I don't have. The best that I had was for 6 years. My sponsor's name was Gaston. He was 18 years sober when I met him, and I was 4 years sober. I'd moved to a different town. And I moved from Los Angeles to Thousand Oaks, about 45 miles north of Los Angeles. And he was kind of like, the big man on campus, the guru of Thousand Oaks in AA. And I liked what he shared, and the fact that he was sponsoring a lot of guys. And so I asked him to be my sponsor. And what I can tell people, and I told that at meetings when I got cakes from him and from other people. My father knew me from the outside in. Gaston knew me from the inside out. It was a different relationship. It was way deeper than the relationship I had with my father, who died when he was 85. And so the interesting thing about Gaston was, when I used to go over to his house and, we'd do some step work, there was a line in the book that I could not accept. And it was actually just in one of the stories. It's in Dr. Bob, Alcoholic Addict. And it says, nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. And when I told him about that, he said, well, get the big book from the shelf. And I went up to his shelf and I was going to pull the big book out, the blue one. And he goes, no, not that one, the one next to it. And it was the first edition. And Dr. Bob's story wasn't even in the first edition. So he just told me, forget about it. You don't have to think, you don't have to believe that. Some people do, some people don't. Everything's God's will or nothing's God's will. I put him on a pedestal. I really thought, that I would never be able to measure up to being as quote unquote as good an AA person as Gaston was. And then one day I found out the reason why. Because he actually came out to Santa Barbara to speak in a meeting when I moved from Thousand Oaks to Santa Barbara. And he had never mentioned this before, but he was speaking just like I'm speaking, telling his life story. And he told the story about hiding bottles under the seat of his car. And he used to, he'd drink and drive, a lot of alcoholics do. So one day he came to a stop sign and he found it necessary to reach under the car seat and get the bottle of vodka. And his foot slipped off the brake and hit the accelerator, and he killed a 12-year-old little boy. And I never did that, and I hope nobody in this room did that. So, that's what he had to, he had to give that. He had to make an amends, a living. He can't make a living amends to, he can't make an amends to that boy, but he made an amends to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous every single day. And that's, I guess, how he could live with himself. This is just my story. At 6 years of sobriety, he'd been married 5 times. He worked in an agency of the government that was secret. He told me it killed people. He told me he was kicked out of countries in the Middle East for drinking. And he got married for the fifth time. He was about 57. His wife was 28. And they had a kid, and they would bring the kid to meetings, and the kid would cry. And I told him that he was being selfish. And we just got into an argument, and I had to speak to some other people in the program, and they just said, "Gaston's full of shit," So I just, I fired him, and that was that. But he had a major, major, major effect on my life, and I'm very grateful for that. And he passed away just short of his 40th birthday in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I've talked about sponsorship a bit, and so now I'm just going to talk what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I was born in South Africa in 1962. I lived there until 1977. I was 15 years old when we came to America. When I lived in South Africa, I learned a couple things from my parents. I learned to fear them, and I was taught to fear black people. I was brought up racist and homophobic, and that was, the gold. I say this very facetiously: the golden years of apartheid in South Africa was a racist, fascist regime. And I was a little kid, but I was part of it. That's we, 90, 90, 95% of the white population was. And I had a very big PTSD moment one night when we came home from a play, and we had a big house, 5-bedroom house, acre and a half, tennis court, swimming pool, and a big, big wall. And on the wall was pieces of broken wine bottles and glass that people used to put for security. It's hideous now that I think about it. But the gate was open, and we came to the front door, and the front door was wide open. And this my father's study, the windows were smashed out. And two guys came out of the house, and I thought I was gonna die. I mean, I really did. And I ran to the neighbor's house. They ran away too. One guy was holding about 10 of my dad's suits over his shoulder, and a clock that my father had gotten in Switzerland when he went on a business trip to Zurich. And I only dealt with that when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank goodness nobody was hurt, but it was super scary. And I also had this feeling of that I was a coward because I ran away. I didn't stay with my father, my sister, and my mother. And in hindsight, I just did the best that I could do at that moment. Alcohol a couple years later gave me liquid courage, and I could do a lot of things that I couldn't do sober when I was under the influence of alcohol. My parents were perfectionists in a sense. My father had actually gone to Harvard and did an MBA at Harvard. Him and his brother were the first two brothers from South Africa to actually go in the 50s. And he had this little poem, and it went, good, better, best, never shall I rest till my good is better and my better best. So when I got 95 on a test, my father would go, that's not bad, Jeff, It's like, I thought it was pretty good. But and then my mother, I found out when I came to America one day and turned on the TV, and it was Phil Donahue in the afternoon, and he was talking about child abuse. And then it was like concrete. I just thought my mother was very strict and cruel, but she was a child abuser when I was a little kid. She beat me with anything and everything she could. And then there was also the verbal punishments that I got. I remember when I was 12 years old, she bought me this jacket, and she looked at me in the eye and she said, because I had ADHD way before I even figured that I had it. I mean, was diagnosed. And I used to lose caps and sh and sweaters and keys and everything. So she put this little jacket on me, and she said to me, and she held my like arms, and she goes, Jeff, if you lose this jacket, I will kill you. And one day I left it in this big, big building, and I remember running around the building just screaming, my mother's gonna kill me, my mother's gonna kill me. And I believed it. So we left South Africa because of the apartheid system, basically, just to get out of the country. I was very fortunate. My parents did not want me to go into the army, which was very, very difficult in South Africa. I mean, it's difficult anywhere, but it's kind of like X amount of people die during the training. And so we came to Los Angeles. They wanted me to get a good education. I ended up going to Beverly Hills Get High School, and it was off to the races. I started drinking, I started smoking weed, and it was fun, at first, but it pretty much got out of hand. I did graduate, obviously from high school and get into a good college. But once I got into college, my drinking and using became pretty much daily. I would go to school for 6 hours on Monday and 6 hours on Wednesday. And at Wednesday at 9 o'clock at night, I was drinking an eight pints of not vodka, tequila for 99 cents, just to quote unquote feel normal, just to be able to drive home. And it was amazing how many times I drove under the influence and I didn't kill anybody, didn't get into any major crashes. The biggest crash I ever got into was this other guy was driving and I was rolling a joint. And the most important, once we crashed the car, the first thing we did was get to a pay phone and call somebody to get the 12 pack out of the trunk because we didn't want to get busted. And it's amazing to even contemplate how risky my behavior was and how lucky I was, because so many other people were less fortunate. So, I finally came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 20 at the age of 21, and I was pushed by my parents to go, and I just thought it was a death sentence. Little did I know that it would be a life sentence, that it would change my life for the better. I started off in the Pacific group, and I'm so grateful that there were other types of meetings, because 700 people on Sunset Boulevard, very strict AA. Just wasn't for me. I had long hair, I had a beard, and I found the West Side Orlano Club. I found guys there who, back in the 80s had a lot of tattoos, and we used to go to the meeting after the meeting at coffee shops until sometimes, 1, 2 in the morning. And these guys would tell stories about nickels and dimes, and I had no idea what they were talking about until I found out that they had spent 5 years in jail, 10 years in jail. And none of that happened to me, but it was just interesting to so interesting to listen to their stories, and then to see the sobriety that they how they had changed. So my sobriety date is June 1 of 1987. I stopped drinking at some point in 1986. I believe it was in February of 86, but then I started smoking weed one day at a time. And when I stopped drinking, the physical incomprehensible demoralization that I felt was really extreme. I mean, I had insects crawling up and down my arms. I couldn't light a cigarette in the morning. I had no concentration. I had no job. At that point, I was looking for red cents on the ground, because if I could find 62 cents, then I could get a Schlitz malt liquor, drink it fast, and would take the edge off for 10 minutes. But yeah, so stopping drinking was very difficult physically, but stopping weed psychologically was even worse. I didn't want to stop smoking weed, but I just knew that it was so detrimental to my life. Some people can do it, all power, whatever. Maybe it's an outside issue, but for this alcoholic addict, I had to stop drinking and smoking so that I could start taking medicine and heal. Because when you stay up for 3 months, excuse me, for 3 months, yeah, for 3 weeks at a time, you lose all perspective of reality, and your thinking gets very distorted, and you end up in a mental hospital like I did. So that was 1984. I mean, 1987, I had a really bad experience in my life, because I stopped taking my meds. I'd gone to the West Side Orlano Club, and I'd heard people saying there that if you're sober from the neck up, if you only take an aspirin or a Tylenol, otherwise you're not sober. So I stopped my meds, and then again, unfortunately, I got delusional, and I ended up in another hospital in Santa Monica, where the elevator was locked, and my psychiatrist had 12 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and when he first heard me, he said, "No, you must be on some serious drugs." And they did a blood test, they did a urine test, and I was clean. So he said, "Now you've got even a bigger problem, because if you don't get back on your meds, you're going to be institutionalized." So I got back on the meds, and my life changed dramatically. It's one day at a time. I went to a lot of meetings. I worked the steps, and I built my life around AA. I didn't just fit AA into my life, which I hear some people do. I got really involved in service, and I remember asking my sponsor, and I said, "How long do I have to go to these fucking meetings?" And he goes, "Just until you want to." And then I got it. I really enjoy going to meetings today. I like giving back, which was so freely given to me so many years ago. And then I'm just going to fast forward to 2014. In 2014, I was sitting at my computer, and I read an article which said, "How come God doesn't heal amputees?" And after reading that article, I just said out loud, there is no God. Now, this had been a progression in my life. I didn't believe that, like I said, even in the beginning, that everything's God's will, that there is the supreme being. I'd read a lot of statistics. One is that 25,000 people die every day in the world from hunger. And there was a disconnect. Why is God so good to me in my life, but not good in other people's lives? And why do bad things happen to good people? So I and then I remembered the next day after saying that, kind of in a state of shock, because I went to Vaughan's Market and I bumped into a guy there by the name of Jerry, who had 38 years, and I said to him, Jerry, I don't have a higher power anymore. What am I going to do? And he goes, don't worry about it. Group of drunks, G-O-D. And that was, just a great moment to just to get that relief. And that acronym now for me, can stand for a lot of things. Great outdoors, gift of desperation, good orderly direction. And then I heard my most favorite one in a Zoom meeting, gift of dialogue, because that's how it all started. Two alcoholics, Bill and Bob, talking with each other about their common problem, alcoholism. I'll just say that meeting makers make it. If you go to a meeting and you don't drink in between meetings, you will stay sober. And then other people say, it's not the meetings I make, but the steps I take. And I think it's a bit of both. That's what's worked for me in my program. I think I've spoken for way too long, so I'm going to end by just saying that I was at a meeting one day and I saw a number plate on some guy's car, or it could have been a woman's car, and it just had these letters. IOAA. And the feeling that came over me, because the last 37 years of my life, AA didn't save my life, it gave me a life. Like I mentioned up, I was married for 30 years, I've got two daughters, I had a pretty good career, and now I'm in a relationship with this new woman, and it's on such a different level. She's not Thai, but her family's from Finland, and her father was an alcoholic, so she knows, the history. Her father did not get sober. And the level of intimacy in this relationship is like nothing I've ever expected in my whole life. It's just so wonderful that it took me I was married for until 60. I was divorced. It took me 2 years to work on myself. And then we've been in a relationship now for 19 months, and it's so wonderful, and she's a very, very big supporter of me in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a love that I never had with my first wife. I did, obviously there was a language barrier, and we also had very different views about politics and about monarchies and everything like that. So okay, so the last thing I'm just gonna say is what my girlfriend's just such a gift because I'm sober. The last thing I'm gonna say is, last Tuesday, some people were in despair, some people were elated. I was definitely someone who was in despair, very, very upset. But I remembered the saying, nothing sad, mad, bad or glad will make me take the first drink today. And the hangover's over. Tomorrow's Tuesday, and it's another week. I want to thank you all for listening, and I hope everyone in this room stays sober. Thanks.